Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's just quickly have a chat about my new book, which is coming. It's out June the 27th, and I would just adore you all if you could click pre-order now, because I promise you, this book is even better than my others. The Science of Plant-Based Nutrition is for everyone. It's for people that eat meat and for people that don't. And it's going to help educate you all about the benefits of a plant-based diet. We cover things such as, obviously, the gut microbiome, the immune system. Should you be worried about plant milk, seed oils, anti-nutrients? Do you need to take omega-3 supplements? There are so many questions, and I basically think that the world of scientific research is just changing at a dizzying pace, and myths and fads are proliferating everywhere. So with the Science of Plant-Based Nutrition, you can achieve a plant-packed diet that's right for you. This book is for children all the way up to adults. I hope that it will be in universities again, like the previous one, and schools and libraries. And I've got the most amazing forwards and good praise for it from Deliciously Ella, Joe Wicks, Fern Cotton, and Tim Spector. So if you could head over to Amazon now, hit pre-order on The Science of Plant-Based Nutrition, I promise you won't regret it. Welcome back to season 17 of Food for Thought. It's incredible to be here. My name is Rhiannon Lambert. For everyone that doesn't know, the reason this podcast is so unique is that I myself am a registered nutritionist. So I have two nutritional science degrees, a master practitioner, further diplomas in different areas of nutrition. The Retrition Clinic I founded in 2016, and we have some amazing psychologists, dietitians, nutritionists in there to help you with your one-to-one advice. Not forgetting also, if you need any additional support to your diet, we have Retrition Plus, which is formulated for you with the latest scientific research out there. Now, we're here to bring you a fantastic series ahead, full of tons of amazing guests. If you need any extra information, you can find Retrition across all social media platforms, even from TikTok to Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and of course, you can head over to Amazon and leading bookshops and find any Rhiannon Lambert authored book out there, from the Science of Nutrition to recipe books about pregnancy, and of course, my first baby back in 2017, Renourish. So let's get on to it. Enjoy season 17 of Food for Thought. In this week's episode of Food for Thought, we welcome New York Times best-selling author. She's got her incredible cookbooks. She is the founder of the amazing Plant You. It is Carly Bodrug. So with 3.2 million followers on TikTok and surpassing over 44 million likes, Carly is best known for her plant-based hacks, her scrappy cooking, which I loved chatting about in this podcast. My goodness me, what an inspiration. And recipes that simplify for her a vegan diet, but also Carly does specify that she does not want to tell people they have to go vegan. She just says, eat more plants. She's got a really lovely approach to her work. Her recipes are colorful. They're sustainability focused and they are executed perfectly. She is set to release her new cookbook named Scrappy Cooking with 140 plus plant-based zero waste recipes that are good for you, your wallet and the planet. It's launching in April 24 and it's going to align with Earth Month, which is incredibly thought through. And without a doubt, let's have this chat with the incredible Carly. Hi, Carly.
Oh, I'm so grateful to be here today.
No, it's my pleasure, really, and the Food for Thought listeners' pleasure completely. I think we will start the discussion today by first of all saying, wow, you're another amazing contributor to the plant-based eating space. You create the most delicious recipes, and I guess Obviously, a thank you, but equally, what inspired you to do this? I want to know more about your backstory, which is something that we don't obviously get from the social media page. I'd love to hear it from you.
Yeah, so my journey, I guess, started from the beginning. I actually grew up on a hobby farm with horses and chickens in a small town in Ontario, Canada, which is very far from you, so across the pond, and had just never made the connection to sort of the animals I was eating on my plate, to the animals that we loved around our property. And it wasn't until 2015, and at the time, I was actually working as a morning radio host up in Northern Ontario, living in a small bachelor's apartment, that news broke from the World Health Organization that red and processed meat were now classed as group 2 and group 1 carcinogens. And my dad had had colon cancer when I was 11 years old, and nobody had ever spoken to us about diet. So he had had surgery, chemotherapy, stage 2 colon cancer. He's a survivor. And we had just continued eating a very, very meat-centric diet because really that was what was encouraged by the Canadian government at the time. We had like our plate that had like the half meat, dairy. And it was really shocking because the World Health Organization came out with this news and it felt so contradictory to what we thought we should be eating. And that's when I kind of say going plant-based is almost like opening Pandora's box. So I started just learning about the environmental implications of animal agriculture, as well as the other health impacts that eating an animal-centric diet can have, and slowly had to teach myself from scratch how to go plant-based. And I want to preface this by saying I am not somebody who is expecting everybody to go vegan. That's personally what I did. But I think we can all benefit by eating more vegetables. And I really saw a shift when I started eating plant-based almost immediately. So I had grown up with constipation issues to the point where I had was prescribed a laxative from when I was like 11 to the point where I was now in my early 20s and living on my own. And I had always just thought, oh, you have a slow digestive system. That's what my doctor said. And suddenly now I'm eating more plants. Plants have fiber. And this issue that I've had my whole life goes away. So it was just this eye-opening thing where I felt so inspired to talk about it because I just felt like nobody was talking about going plant-based, yet it was just felt like this win-win-win all around. So that in a sort of short sense is the story of how I went plant-based and then started documenting the journey. And now we're here on this podcast.
Wow. It's a lot. And do you know what? It solidifies in my mind still the misinformation out there, especially in the nutrition world, and the discrepancies between the medicinal system that was in place. Obviously, things are being worked on now in the last 10 years, but it's wild that your dad, it's just awful. It's so sad that he had to go through that and he wasn't given diet advice for that particular cancer at the time. And then second of all, you were 11 and you were put on laxatives instead of a lifestyle intervention at that age.
Yeah, it's wild to think about.
And yeah, it's really struck a chord with me. So you've clearly gone through so much. And also, I love that you said, hey guys, this isn't for everyone, but one thing we can all do is increase our plants, which is what plant-based means. It means mainly plants. Less animal produce. And I think that's less intimidating for people to hear, but the data is there. Now, you grew up on a farm. I find that amazing. And what's happened to the farm? How does that work now with your new life?
Yeah, so farm is like a loose term. My parents would call it a hobby farm. So there was no animals being killed, which was interesting because my family was such big animal lovers growing up. Like all I remember is they were constantly taking in cats, dogs, strays of all kinds. So we had 5 horses, we had chickens, we did have eggs that we would eat, but we were not selling like the produce. So my parents still have the little the property, but no more animals. And not to say it's because actually all of us have mostly gone to a plant predominant diet. It's just they're older now, so they don't want all the farm animals to take care of. But it is interesting to think about because I just it took me so long to make that connection, right? And we had such close relationships with our animals growing up, and really then something clicked when I went plant-based that there's really no difference, right, between the meal on your plate to the animals you know and love, whether it's a dog, a cat, wow, a horse, a pig.
And that it's the disconnect from food, which is the message in society, I don't know about over there, but in the UK, there's a huge disconnect. When I give talks to schools and I go in to talk about nutritional education and teaching children where food comes from, because I think a lot of people just assume it's there in a packet, and that's, there is this disconnect from plant to plate or from produce to plate, whatever it may be. It's actually something I've got a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I try really hard, because I know, obviously, that's what I do for a living, but even where nuts come from, nuts don't just appear in the packet, gotta crack them, they gotta come off where they grow. It's just it's mind-blowing. But so being a, let's go back, let's rewind, there's so much to cover. You were a radio host, which I found really interesting. Do you think that helped you moving and navigating the online world a bit? Because in 2019, wasn't it, you finally said, that's it?
Yeah. So my background, my education's in journalism and then broadcast journalism. I also have a diploma in. So I definitely think off the hop when I went plant-based, I knew I had the skill set to perhaps amplify this message that I was so passionate about, which is why I started like a blog at the same time that I was working as a radio host. It took me a while. Like I probably started the blog in 2016, 2017. And I mean, you would know well yourself, it takes a long time to see any monetization from something like a blog. And I don't even know at the time when I started it that I had even that in the back of my head. It wasn't until probably around 2018, 2019, I launched a meal plan program. So I was sending out, I had gotten a holistic health coach certification online and was just sending out meal ideas. So it was certainly not like, you're going to eat this and have these results. It's like, if you want to eat more plants, I'm going to send out 4 recipes per week. And it was a subscription for $7.99 per month. So I launched that. And then very quickly, it became evident that this was a business that could outpace what I was making. Now at the time, I was working at a hospital. I don't know in the UK if you have like foundations at your hospitals, but in Canada, we, for all of our hospital equipment, we have charities at each hospital. So I was working for a hospital charity and in marketing. And I just felt so pulled to what I was doing in the plant-based space with the blog and the meal plan community that I finally, 2019, was like, okay, I'm going to make the jump. And I remember my parents were just like, you're crazy. Like, stay in your stable job with your pension and whichever else. I'm like, nope, now is the time, I'm going to try it. So I made the jump and then kind of never looked back.
Which is amazing, because we've seen this space as social media. Definitely when I went to uni and was studying to be a nutritionist, my goal was not to be on Instagram because it didn't exist. So that's, I'm of that generation before. But what I find crazy today is that it is an aspiration for people to have what you have now, Carly, I think online, to have this established business. And it's a goal that people set themselves, like they deliberately go to do what you did to become, to navigate the online world. So what would you say enables you to stay fresh, to stay current? How do you keep the recipe inspiration going? What inspires you?
Yeah, my biggest thing about social media is that, and I think it's been the key to kind of building a large platform, is that every time I put a piece of content out into the online space, I think about, is this valuable to somebody? Is this educational? I try not to make it about about myself, but more about how can I serve people. And in that way, if the content is valuable, if the content is good, I always say the cream will rise, right? Like the best content, these platforms want people to stay on their platforms. And if you can retain somebody's viewership because a piece of content is really valuable, then it's going to be served and served and served to your community. So that's really been the secret to success, and just trying to always innovate and make sure that I'm serving my community best. I do spend a lot of time on the platforms, scrolling. I try to call it mindful scrolling, but seeing what sort of video style is trending. And I remember it was probably 2020, 2021 when Instagram came out with Reels. Like TikTok had taken off and then they were suddenly like, we're going to go Reels. I had only done infographic photos before then, which were recipes. Recipe photos with like little ingredient icons at the top. And I was like, no, you saw the algorithm switch overnight and you're like, no. But I think you kind of had to innovate, right? And just jump on it. So I'm glad I had the ability, and I'm sure the broadcasting background kind of played in there where I was able to jump on the video aspect quite quickly. But yeah, I think it's staying on top of trends and then also at the forefront serving your community is number one.
Which is lovely because you've got to have a core value. Otherwise, I do feel that it becomes a very strange space. It doesn't become a positive space which we know there are people online that are just there to monetize, that are just there for a reason. But, you know, having a passion and a core belief and an actual goal to help inspire people is really lovely. And to be honest, very refreshing, very refreshing to hear. So coming from a place where you've now got this responsibility, do you have a set rota with how you work your business in terms, I'm sure people are fascinated listening, thinking, how on earth do you navigate these different platforms? Do you have set days for TikTok or Insta? And how does that work?
I wish I could say I'm one of those people who has like a year out content calendar and I'm working back and really have a bulletproof plan, but I kind of fly by the seat of my pants, and less so now that I have a beautiful team of contractors that help me do what I do. So I have an amazing blog writer, photographer now for the blog. So I do have to be somewhat organized so that they can kind of work back from what I'm doing. But I usually plan about 2 weeks, and we do shooting days. So my sister works with me part-time and she'll come over to my house and assist me in shooting. And we usually do that about 2 days a week. But it, like I said, it's not a very organized process. It's not like I have a huge content calendar. And I usually do post on one, like if somebody's listening and they want to become a content creator in whichever space, I do recommend when you create a piece of content, make it off of the platforms. So create it and edit it off of Instagram, off of TikTok, off of YouTube, off of Facebook, and then disperse it on all of them. Because you might as well get the biggest bang for your buck for one piece of content. It just doesn't make sense to put all that effort and hours of work into like a 30-second video. And you might as well throw it up on all of those platforms that I just mentioned, and Pinterest as well. So we do it. It just depends. I remember when Reels first came out, I was like, I need to post a recipe every day, which was ridiculous. So we aim for 2 to 3 days a week, and we post to all platforms when we do that, as well as a blog, which is also a recommendation. At the end of the day, we don't own Instagram, we don't own TikTok, we don't own Facebook or YouTube. These platforms could be taken to us from us at any moment, and we would have nothing really to contest it by. So it's really important that you build your own thing as well. So I have a blog at plantyou.com, and that's where all of the recipes live. So I have a database, and so that's been really important, as well as kind of building that out. But at the start, and I'm sure you can relate with all of this, because I feel like we've had a similar, at least like Instagram sort of journey, is that at first you're on your own, right? Like you don't have the financial means to kind of build a contracting team around you, and you're doing everything yourself, which I think in a way is good because you've learned every aspect of your business, but slowly but surely you can build a team around you, and that really helps keep things going and the momentum moving.
Yeah, it's so unrealistic to post something every single day of the week. But it started out like that. I was the same back in whatever year it was. I was still at uni, and when I'd graduated, and then the app came out, and I was like, oh right, I was working in this cafe and I was doing the recipes in the cafe and seeing their nutrition clients, and I was trying to post for them every single day. And I used to do breakfast, lunch and dinner posts every day.
Oh my goodness.
I know. But it was just a static image, and I was not a great photographer. But for some reason, that's how it started. But that is worlds away from the skills that people need now to make all this additional content. And like you said, without support, and I'm the same as you, I don't have a content schedule that goes months. I used to, and it's just since I've got two kids, and since that, you know, it went out the window. So I love that 2 weeks ahead, I think, is still really good, Carly. I think you're doing really well being at least 2 weeks ahead of everything that's in demand. Have you noticed, this is a question that I'm fascinated on, where you are in the world right now, have you noticed a difference in the cost of living, in the produce that you purchase, and the quality of the produce?
Oh my goodness, yes. The cost, I would say, has probably doubled since like 2019 in Canada especially. And I don't know if it's like this where you are, but most of our produce in the winter is shipped in fresh, and it's expensive as all heck. Like I cannot believe my grocery bill some weeks, especially as a recipe tester. It's a whole other level. But I think so much about the people out there struggling to afford food, and it is a very real thing. And I see online all the time, people be like, plant-based is affordable. And I'm like, maybe it's more affordable than buying like meat and eggs or cheese, but it is not affordable. Like buying fresh food is very expensive.
Yeah.
So yes, I've seen a giant hike, and this has been one of my actual inspirations for reducing food waste, because I think the statistics in the U.S. is that a family on four on average wastes $1,500 worth of food, up to 30% of all of the food they buy. And a lot of it comes down to not planning their meals, because we're all so busy. So we rush into the grocery store, we buy a bunch of fresh food with really good intentions, and then the week goes by and you haven't used it. And then second of all is we're very hyper concerned as a society about food spoilage, which is a good concern to have, obviously. I would not suggest that people eat spoiled food, but oftentimes we'll throw out things before they've actually gone bad, which is we're throwing like precious money, especially with the expense of groceries, down the drain. How about where you are? Have you noticed it?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. And it's a really nuanced conversation, because I'm totally with you. Household waste, big one, factor number one, not having the cooking skills. So one thing that I'm finding is in the education system, I'm sure it's the same now, actually, I'm pretty sure this is a Western society thing. There's not a focus on cooking from scratch like there used to be. You know, people are living on convenience 24/7, and that involves a lot of waste at home in the fridge. Like you said, ultra processed food consumption's gone up. Those are awful stats. Something like 60% of children in the UK, 60% of their diets come from ultra-processed food, which is huge. And it's because parents are also time poor, because the work pressures have gone up, the cost of living's gone up, so you're working more. You don't have time to cook at the end of the day. You've got other things. You've got to pay your heating bill. So people are buying things that are marketed. It's the marketing, the food industry, marketing products as healthy, that, you know, they're picking anything. Oh, it's a source of calcium, therefore it's healthy for you, which probably... it's not always 24% of the time. It's probably not always right. It's a huge conversation to be had. And that's why stripping it back to basics and pages like yours, where people can go see how the recipe is made, see it's not actually rocket science. It is quite simple. And then you can do it and shove it in the freezer and then get it out when you need it. And you can save. So plant-based, it can be cheaper, but only if people have a page like yours or, you know, the skills to do it. That's the problem, right?
It's a huge problem. And I think when people go plant-based, the first thing they do, they'll go to the grocery store and they'll go to the freezer aisle, and you're looking for one-to-one substitutes for your animal products, right? So you're maybe looking at vegan chicken fingers or like a ground beef substitute, when in reality, both healthier and both more affordable are whole foods. So like lentils,
a can beans, of beans,
oats, grains. These are going to be the most affordable out of anything, as well as the healthiest and oftentimes the easiest to prepare. So it's kind of like what you said, stripping it back to the basics. And also my number one tip for anybody who is wanting to reduce their grocery bill and just be more mindful about their waste in general is to take a piece of paper, like whatever day you go grocery shopping, and jot down what your meals are likely going to be for the week. And this doesn't have to be like an extensive app system where you're meal planning every meal down to the wire. It's like, okay, I think I'm going to have overnight oats for breakfast for these 3 days. And I think I'm going to make a chili and then I'll have that for lunch on Wednesday. This is really going to set you up so that you can then make a grocery list, look in your fridge and pantry to make sure you're not buying items that you already have. So you're at some money savings then pop into the grocery store and just have a use for each item that you're buying. It's going to help you eat healthier. It's going to help you save time and it's going to help you save money. So that's the biggest thing. Doesn't have to be complicated, right?
Yeah. And this is it. It's the trying to overcomplicate it, because we are sold the idea that we have to buy into quick fixes, that we have to spend money on special lotions and potions and, you know, packets of powders that we have to have every day to be healthy. And that's not true. We literally just need to cook more and spend the money that we're spending on all this other stuff as well. Strip it back. I just want to speak very quickly about the Retrition Plus vegan multivitamin. So I designed this with Retrition Plus to support those that are following a plant-based diet with four key nutrients. We're talking about vitamin B12, of course, iron, iodine, and selenium. Now it's packed with the essential nutrients, and our multivitamin is of course your trusted companion for maintaining a healthy, you know, vegan plant-based lifestyle. So despite its powerful nutritional support, it comes in one of the smallest capsules. This was deliberate because I've always had a difficult time taking pills and supplements. So it's convenient, it's easy to incorporate into your daily routine. It will elevate your journey, whether it be vegan, whether it be plant-based, with essential scientifically backed nutrients in one simple capsule. If you guys want to go and check out the range at Retrition Plus and our new products, which I know are going to help so many people, just head over to RetritionPlus.com, and you can also check us out on social media at Retrition Plus. We have discussed food waste. What would be your big tip in the kitchen? Because, you know, you do Scrappy Cooking, which I love that series in terms of minimizing food waste. It's things like using the stalks that people think are just gross, so they chuck it in the bin, right?
Yes. So there are so many things that we can eat that we throw away. And so the biggest one that always comes to mind when somebody asks this is broccoli stalks. And oftentimes in grocery stores, we pay for broccoli by weight. So we're paying for the stalk, which is heavy, and bringing that home and then throwing it in the trash where it's completely edible. It tastes off. Honestly, like asparagus, like that would be what I would compare it to. You just have to peel out the outer edge and it's very, very nutritious. So that's one that I always say. The other one is like greens. So your radish tops, your beet greens, all of these things can be eaten. They're hearty, delicious greens. What I love to do, you can actually just throw them into a salad. You can steam them. But personally, I love to make like a vegan pesto. So I'll throw them into a blender with some cashews and a little bit of olive oil and some nutritional yeast and make like a delicious sauce to go on pastas. And finally, one thing I recommend is whenever I cook, I like to get a bowl out where I put all of my scraps. So this could be your onion peels, your little ends of the garlic, which are peels from your carrots, and throw them in the bowl, give them a wash, and then you can actually stuff them in like a reusable freezer bag and make stock with them when your bag is full. So to make a beautiful stock, you just add all of those scraps to a pot, put water up till it's about 2 inches above it. And I like to add some turmeric and black pepper to make it even more nutritious. I call it like a vegan mineral broth, kind of like your own bone broth, but without the bones, yeah. Which you could put your bones in there if you're somebody who eats chicken or whichever else. Is a great way to also make stock. And yeah, that's a great way to reduce your food waste. And then at the end of the day, you do the best you can. And if you have a composting system, I don't know if you have this where you are, but in my city, we actually have green bins that they'll pick up each week. And then take it to a composting system in our city, which is amazing. We don't even have to have our own composters.
I know. What I find really worrying here is that I don't think people are taught how to use their green bins. So unless you spend the time to look at the labels on the side of the bin of what can go in it and what can't, I tend to find that the system's a bit flawed here, but it should be utilised in that way. So you've mentioned making a stock and things from scratch. People are probably thinking, oh my goodness, has she had some gourmet cooking lessons? How did you get into cooking? Because like I said, people aren't, it's not a focus anymore, sadly.
So let me tell you, I have been haunted in my entire career by the biggest imposter syndrome, because I did not cook until I went plant-based. I really, like, it was just chicken and rice before I went plant-based, which I was probably about 23, 24 when I went plant-based. I'm 31 now. And then I went plant-based and had to teach myself to cook from scratch. And I still do not think I'm any gourmet chef, anything crazy. I'm just a regular person who likes to cook some plants. And the best thing about plant-based cooking is that the stakes are very low. Listen, if you screw up a soup, there's not enough stock, you add some more. You're not like overcooking a steak or undercooking chicken. Stakes are very low. If you screw it up, you can save it. And trust me, I have many times. And when I put out my first cookbook, I was just, honestly, the eve that it came out, I was so horrified, because I'm like, everybody is about to find out that I cannot cook, which didn't happen. People enjoyed the recipes, but I've tried to think about it now as my superpower, as that, like, this is cooking for regular people. Like, any recipe that you find on my page is something that I've cooked and that you can cook, I promise you, because it is not gourmet by any means. So that's the biggest thing. I taught myself, stakes are low, plant-based cooking so fun. There's like, I think something like million edible plants on the planet.
Yeah.
You might want to
check
that.
We consume six regularly every single week. Isn't that mad? The same six.
Yes. And there's like so many, and we should be consuming at least 30 different plants per week. So it look at it as fun. It doesn't have to be like this gourmet Martha Stewart super like hosting meal every time you make a meal. Could be just throwing things in a pot and hopefully it turns out delicious.
And like you said about the cost of things as well, like, don't fear cans of beans and pulses and things, because actually that is better for your health still to consume the beans. And there's a lot of myths circulating about things that are stored in cans, or, you know, frozen vegetables can actually be more nutritious than fresh sometimes. So you've really got to check the labels, and what country you're in will vary the varying factors on how you decipher things. But honestly, you don't have to be a chef. And that's the misconception I get as a nutritionist, is that I am some kind of chef as well. And I'm like, no, I help clients one-to-one, and there'll be some food inspiration along the way, but I'm not by any means a chef. So thank you for sharing that, because I think it will make people feel at ease when it comes to starting out. So what would you say are the top three dishes that you've got on your page? Like, if you I know this is a really hard question because there are so many, but if someone's going to start cooking, what would be your top three ideas to try first?
Absolutely. So number one would be a soup. So I post so many soups because I think they're such an easy and nutritious way of getting your plants in. I just yesterday, I think it would be a great starter recipe, posted a vegan creamy wild rice soup, and it has 14 different plants in it. So the intention behind the recipe is to help people achieve that 30 plant mark, which a study done by, I think it was the Gut Health Project, showed that eating 30 different plants per week means you'll likely have a more diverse microbiome, which obviously impacts every facet of our health. So this soup just has sweet potato, celery, carrot, onion, wild rice, and it all goes in just one pot. So you really, again, you can't screw it up. It's very easy. Another one, if you're somebody who is apprehensive about tofu, which I remember when I first went vegan, I was like, tofu is so gross. Like, I could not even barely bring myself to eat it. And now it's my favorite food. So I think it's all in the preparation of tofu. And I have a General Tso's tofu on my blog that people love. They say they fed it to their like carnivore husbands and yeah. they love it. So I would definitely try that one out. And it's super easy. You just make a really delicious like sauce out of some red chili sauce and soy sauce and cook the tofu up in some cornstarch or some arrowroot powder, which is going to make it crispy, and it's so delicious. And then number three, I have a really delicious vodka penne recipe on my blog, which people love. And you don't need to use vodka. It's just, it's like a vodka sauce, but you can use lemon juice in place of vodka. And it is just so creamy and delicious. And coconut milk is used in place of the cream for that.
I mean, absolutely blooming delicious. You are like a nutritionist's best friend because we, you know, like you said, you stay to the American Gut Project. We've got the Smiles Trials research with food and mood. All these plants, guys, are beneficial for our health. I know there's a lot of misinformation online, but you cannot dispute the scientific research that just upping your fiber and your plants is good for your health. And those recipes, check it out. You know, I just had a look at the soup. It's absolutely insane. And also, it's had like 60,000 likes. That's incredible. I just think, honestly,
people like the plants.
You go, girl, because it's absolutely amazing to see and so, so reassuring for us health professionals that are trying to get messages across that we can say, look, go and follow these accounts that are just so good and a source of recipe inspiration. But how do you manage the negative sides of this? Can we talk about, first of all, the fact, obviously, you're launching a cookbook in April and it does coincide with Earth Month, which is, I think, a very thoughtful choice, but you've got such a big platform, Carly, and you're 31 and you've been there, you've seen it. How do you deal with the downside? Because it's not all roses, social media.
Yeah, absolutely. I think having been on social media now since 2017, 2018, and I think in a way, which is probably not the best thing, is I'm a bit numb to negativity. Like, it kind of just rolls off my back. And honestly, a lot of the commentary is just so silly. Like, some people will come on the page and they'll go on a recipe and they'll be like, I'm going to eat more bacon just to cancel out your recipe. And I'm like, this is so bizarre because never in my life have I been on my like Instagram feed and seen someone like share a rib recipe and been like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna eat more plants. yeah, you just scroll by, right? So I think you let it roll off your back. And then also, I think the other thing is that I'm really rooted in my why. Like, I really, really believe that everyone can benefit from eating more plants. And if you really, truly believe in something and feel like you're doing the right thing, it almost becomes impenetrable. Like, I'm so, so rooted in this. And it's so funny you mentioned that there's so much misinformation online. The craziest thing is you would think the message that eating more vegetables is good is like something that no one could refute. But there's just so much crazy stuff online. And I think at the end of the day, it's just knowing that I feel so right in telling people to eat more plants that I just keep going, right?
Honestly, Carly, I've even heard that, you know, plants are cancerous recently, someone was
saying.
Yes! I was just like, what is going on with the world? Like, you can eat whatever diet you choose to eat, but don't say that, you know? It's just crazy. And what's worrying is, it also, it triggers what we deal with in my clinic and environment is poor relationships with food. You know, we've got people with a variety of health conditions related to the modern diet today. And the simple message of what we need to be doing, which is cooking more and eating more plants, is being refuted in these strange corners on the internet, which is bizarre. But it's so good that you're able to literally, it's like water off a duck's back is the phrase, isn't it? You're just like, oh, whatever, I'm moving on. And do you have a kind of, I don't know, a future... You said you don't think more than 2 weeks ahead, but with the book and the mission statement, do you have a future goal there?
Yeah, it's hard to say, right? I feel like mediums, I think probably if you would have asked me this question 3 years ago, I would have said, oh, I would love to be on television and teaching people how to cook plants. But I don't know how many people are even watching TV these days, right? I think we potentially could have more impact and reach more people by staying online. So I think it's dependent on the medium. I'm just very focused on influencing people to eat more plants. And that's not to say that, again, I want everybody to go vegan. I just really, so wherever I can have the most impact, I will go. And I think it was interesting when I put my first cookbook out, I had this large social platform at the time, and I really didn't know how the cookbook would land. And I've just been so shocked. More people make recipes out of that book than anywhere else, even though I have kind of large social platforms. And I think it's about having something tangible in your hands that makes it a lot more approachable and easier. So if I can continue having impact writing books, I would like to put out many more, because that's where sort of my thought lies. I'd like to, and this is what all content creators, I think, kind of say. I'd love to get to a point where I have time to make long form video content to teach people kind of the practice of cooking plants on YouTube. But oh my goodness, it's a lot of work. So I just, again, I'll go where I can have the most impact. And at this very current moment, when you ask me that, I don't know what that's going to be in 5 years, right?
I think. What do you think? Well, I think you answered it beautifully. I think you said exactly what you feel and what your purpose is and what you mean. And that is wherever people are to inspire, that's what I want to do, right? It's the perfect answer. And I find it really interesting what you said about the mediums of where people go to for advice. So we've got a stat that 40% of people, instead of going to see their doctor, turn to social media, which is quite scary anyway in itself. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I know. So it's the damage that's doing long term. So please stay online for your positive, delicious recipes. I've got a few friends like you that are in the amazing plant-based space, and you guys release the most delicious recipe books, and you're doing amazing things. So yeah, don't leave it. And that leads me on to questions from our listeners. So Lucy said, what does a healthy diet mean to you? Because obviously there's a difference between the word health and, of course, well, I don't know. I'll let you answer that. I'll let you define that.
I think a healthy diet to me is a diet where you feel your best. And I don't mean just feel your best as in like your gut health, which we talked a lot about on here, but feel your best mentally, emotionally, and physically. And I think the mental part plays a huge role. And this is something we don't often talk about in the plant-based space, but when you do go vegan or you go plant-based, this can be incredibly alienating. And what I recommend to people sometimes is it doesn't have to be so binary, right? You could eat a plant predominant or a plant-based diet and then still be able to go out for sushi with your friends on the weekend. What really matters is what you're doing 90% of the time or 85% of the time or even 75% of the time. And I mean, if you believe that we have one life on this planet or whichever else, there needs to be room for enjoyment within there. And food can be such a source of joy, pleasure. And I think it's like a healthy diet to me is one that allows room for physical health, mental health, and also enjoying a meal with friends.
Oh, brilliant. Yes, that's what it's all about. It really is. And health is, it's everything, isn't it? It's wealth, it's enjoyment, it's how you age. And those are the factors that I think are so lost in this strange nutrition online world where anyone, I guess everyone eats. We always say that on this podcast, that everyone feels like they're an expert of their eating. Or, you know, it's also an emotive factor, how we eat and the food that we choose to eat and consume. But you can't deny that our happy hormones, our serotonin is produced in our gut, the bacteria that live within our gut need the food in order to create different chemical signals. And it's a huge minefield. What advice would you give to someone who's looking to share their recipes on TikTok or Instagram? And that one's from Robin.
For sure. So the biggest thing is that you need to get used to making short video content. And the great news is that you do not need fancy, crazy equipment to make beautiful Instagram and TikTok content. I'll let you in on a secret. I use my cell phone. I used to film on my camera and everybody always asks me, what do you use? I'm like, my phone. So you can use your phone. Natural lighting is key. If you can put whatever you're filming up next to a window, that's going to make all of the difference. And the biggest thing is like, you can take, it's kind of like what we talked about diet. You don't need all of the fancy powders and supplements and whichever else. You just kind of got to get your hands dirty and start cooking. Same thing with making a short video content is your first video. If you go back on my feed and look at my first video, it was terrible. And the 10th video was terrible. It probably wasn't until about the 50th video where you're like, okay, this is starting to look like a sort of organized production. So you really have to get your hands dirty and start posting. And then if something does take off, something resonates with your audience, look at what took off and think about what it was about that video that really was successful. And then you can duplicate it. And then that is the secret sauce. You just start serving your community with the best content possible.
Oh, really, really good tips, definitely. And then the final question would be, what are your cupboard essentials? So for someone that is a new vegan or a new plant-based eater, do you have some things that are always in your cupboard? No compromises. And oh, sorry, that was from Louise.
Yes. So I always have a can of chickpeas in my cupboard. I buy them like in bulk. I always have whole grain pasta and rice. And I always have, my spice cupboard is full. So I always have garlic powder, paprika, thyme. And really, if you have like, I say like it's a beans, greens, and grains. So if you've got your greens in your fridge, I always have like kale, spinach, chard, and you have a grain, whether it be rice, quinoa, bulgur, and then you have beans. So whether it's black beans, chickpeas, you can make a million different meals with that. And my final one would probably be like diced tomatoes, because then you've got like a full repertoire there. Add in your spices. You can make like curries, tacos, stews. You're set, and it's healthy and nourishing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, perfect, perfect combination of ingredients. I could not agree more. Now we're going to move on to our fact or fiction round. So you have to answer fact or fiction to the following questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Plant-based cooking is expensive and complicated.
It can be expensive, so I'm going to say fact to that, but fiction to complicated. I think it's very simple, and it doesn't have to be complicated, and I think it can be way more affordable than eating animal products. So I'd say fiction. In
perfect
total.
Answer. Perfect answer. Well, caveated. Food waste is a major global issue.
It is. That is a fact. So food waste actually in the States, 40% of approximately food goes to waste. And that is a huge contributor to global warming because it ends up in our landfills and creates methane gas, which is not good for our planet. So if we can do everything we can to curb food waste, it's a good thing.
Absolutely. You have to be a good cook to be able to make vegan recipes.
Absolutely. You do not. That is fiction. You can throw things in a pot and it's going to turn out okay. Check out my page and I promise you, you'll find something that you can make that anybody can make on there.
Absolutely. Animal agriculture is the largest contributor to our carbon footprint.
Fact. Animal agriculture is not bueno for the planet, unfortunately.
No, I think it's around 60% of emissions. It's huge. Vegan alternatives are always healthier than non-vegan options.
No, that is false. So definitely you don't want to go plant-based. And like I said earlier, you don't want to be just going to the frozen aisle and grabbing a whole bunch of plant-based alternatives that are perhaps packed with questionable ingredients and oils. I think these things are great on occasion and they're awesome for the vegan movement in terms of providing substitutes, but I would not make them the cornerstone of your diet if you're going plant-based.
Love it. A donut's still a donut if it's vegan or it's not vegan.
Very true.
Switching to a vegan diet overnight is the best way to transition.
No, personally took me at least a year to fully go plant-based, and I would take it one meal at a time, look at what you eat in a week and see how you can make simple swaps in your diet to go plant-based. So maybe your dairy milk for soy milk or another alternative, and just seeing how you can make simple swaps like that is a great start, and then start tackling meals. And before you know it, maybe after like 6 months to a year, you might be ready to fully commit to a vegan or a plant-based diet.
Absolutely. You can create delicious meals from a few ingredients.
Absolutely, you can. It's like we talked about earlier with the pantry items, right? It's like diced tomatoes, rice, beans. You've got a really simple meal right there with a little spice.
Absolutely. And buying imperfect or ugly produce helps reduce food waste.
It sure does. Buy the wonky, like, have you ever seen the wonky butternut squash? And also one fun fact is that oftentimes bananas, single bananas, will be left and wasted at the grocery store. So if you can buy the single bananas, they need your love too.
Jade, we had this scientist on, that was a great fact or fiction round, by the way, I'm just rolling into the banana thing. We had a scientist on, I think it was Dr. Stuart Faramond, and he was speaking about the species of banana. So because you grow a large colony of one breed of banana, one of those might get an infection, wipe out the entire thing, and then you're down to the second grade of banana, and then they get an infection, you wipe out. And we're on something like the fifth or sixth generation of the perfect tasting banana. And because people grow them to be identical, so we get the tastiest version, we have lost the biodiversity and the unique variations of banana, which is why, I mean, it's actually
interesting.
Really, it was fascinating. It's actually really sad because all it takes, because we've been only focusing on growing one type, we've just killed all the rest of the varieties of the specific type of fruit. You know, like people that are listening, you know, think about apples. The UK, obviously, we're known for apples here. We get all sorts of different types, Pink Lady, Gala, Red, you know, all these different breeds of apple. There's only one real breed of banana you will ever see in your supermarkets. And that is because we all grow them for that sole purpose of the taste. And we've actually taken food consumption and the way we grow food to the nth degree where it's hard to go back. So if you can buy that single banana and try and pick a diverse range of food, that will help, guys. I just had to reel that off. I don't know why I felt compelled to tell you about the bananas.
No, it's such an interesting fact. Yeah. Ties in perfectly. Yeah. I didn't know that. That's so interesting.
No,
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like the carrots, right? As well, you know, we have orange carrots, even though we know they're a purple, yellow, you know, different varieties, but we breed the orange. So we lose the diversity, which is a knock-on effect on the soil as well. And the microbes in our soil that live there and the B12 absorption. There's a lot of stuff. Anyway, I love this episode, Carly. Thank you so much. I feel like I could talk to you forever, but we have to wrap up the podcast.
This was the best.
It was good. I feel like we've had a good kind of half rant, but half real inspiring conversation, which is fantastic. And we always wrap up with a take home message. And I think from you today, mine would definitely be, my food for thought would be that, you know, just stocking your cupboards with those essential whole grains and, you know, cans of beans, guys, it costs like a fraction of the price of buying a packet of meat. Sometimes into switching your diet a little bit, you don't have to go fully vegan, you just have to cut back. That's the message I think that Carly's got there. And she's got her amazing new book coming out in April, which I know will be a huge success. Carly, what's a take-home message for everyone that you've got today?
That's the take-home message. The magic is in the simplicity. Stick to the basics and you will notice the biggest difference on your wallet, on the planet, and for your health.
Yeah, what a nice way to live, to know that you are making a choice that is good for you, the planet, for everybody really involved. Now, where can everyone go? Not that we need a further introduction, but to learn more about you and the next book.
Yeah, of course. So you can find me on any social channel. My handle is Plant You, PlantYou. And my new book, Plant You Scrappy Cooking, with 140 zero waste plant-based, easy, delicious recipes, comes out April 2nd. And that's going to be available anywhere books are sold.
Oh, it's going to be life-changing. That's what everyone needs right now. How to minimize waste. What can we do? Carly, thank you so much for coming on Food for Thought.
This was a blast. Thank you so much.
Right, that's it. If you're enjoying Food for Thought, you will love what we have coming up in future episodes, I have no doubt. So if you're not already, you just have to hit the subscribe button on your podcast app. So this means you get a little notification bell. I wish I'd known about it earlier. There is a lot of misinformation out there, and I really hope that we're continuing to bring you the latest research along with our special guests to ensure that you're just getting the best experience possible. So if you are enjoying our episodes and you're learning lots, then please do leave us a review or get in touch. This will help enormously and ultimately help us reach more people and make sure we're doing the right thing by you and giving you the right information. So if you want to learn more about the best-selling books, the clinic, perhaps you need to book in to see one of our fantastic clinicians, or to find out more about Retrition Plus, you can find everything you need to know on retrition.com. And you can follow, of course, me on Retrition on all social media platforms. Yes, I'm even on TikTok now, guys, so you can head over there and check it out.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.